here with the After Party Pod, bringing you the coolest, funniest, smartest people, addicts, specifically addicts, but people too, talking about addiction and recovery, how they got sober, how they stay sober, what they do. Yeah, it's Monday. I'm tired already. I'm recording this on a Monday and I'm tired already. Last week I was in Alaska. When was the last time you guys were there? Maybe you're in Alaska now. Nobody's ever emailed me from Alaska and said, I'm from Alaska and I listen to this podcast, but I think you could be there. I was there speaking at the University of Anchorage. Super nice kids, to the point that I don't even feel like calling them kids because they are... I met two that are better composed than any 40-somethings I know. It's kind of frightening. One of them, I said, so, I mean, you're going to take over the world, right? And he very calmly said, yeah, I'm going into politics. So it was a really good experience. Unfortunately, it rained the whole time, so I was not able to see beautiful Alaska. And so I was in downtown Anchorage. It was good, you know? What can I say? Oh, I can say this, that I went and played bingo at a bingo hall after I spoke with, I went with one of the female students, and it was so much fun. Bingo was so much fun. It's very big in Alaska. I wish it was big in LA because I play all the time, but it's kind of you only, it's like at clubs that are trying, or bars that are trying to bring in people, Monday night bingo, and that's not really my thing. I want to play in a bingo hall with people who are serious about bingo. I want to feel like it's a competition to win. Unfortunately, I did not. We got there for like this 7:30 game. We got there at 9. We played for about 20 minutes, and then the next game was at 10:30, and we didn't have it in us to wait, but it was very fun for the 20 minutes or whatever we played. Is that important? I couldn't tell you, but here's what is important. This podcast is now sponsored by Audible. Do you guys know Audible? It's the best, the only website out there with audiobooks. It has over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. If you want a free audiobook and a 30-day free trial from me, all you got to do is go to audibletrial.com/afterpartypod. Go there. Do it. Support the show. Get a great audiobook. That's what I have to say to you before I tell you about our guest today. Such a great guy, Mike Gaffney. I heard about him because he's part of this recovery comedy community. This is like, there's even an agency and there's this group of comedians who are sober who go around and do recovery comedy. And I had heard he was one of the funnier ones. And I think I was right. He was on Last Comic Standing this last season. And he's from Jersey, where he still lives. He's a single dad of two kids. He got sober at 24. But it sounds like, from what he told me in this interview, he needed to. That wasn't being alarmist in any way. He was a crack smoker, stealing from his parents. Oh, it's a great story about Al-Anon gone well. His mom was really doing all the stuff that they tell you not to do. You know, if you've got a kid that's like stealing from you and, you know, you think he's going to die with drugs, you know, a lot of what they'll tell you in Al-Anon is, you know, you got to stop, just cut him out. Plus, did you see Intervention? They always said it on Intervention. Cut him off. Stop, you know, stop letting him live at home. Tell him you can't stand this anymore. Anyway, you hear what she did, and it worked. But I don't think most moms have the kind of balls that Mike Gaffney's mom clearly has. So stick around. Nice guy, funny guy, Mike Gaffney. Here he is.
I first started taking drugs by chewing blocks of hash.
Oh my God, I think my copy has like blood stains on it from shooting up while reading it.
Party animal. I hate to say that because that makes me sound Paris Hilton-y. I was on the, as I call it, the Autobahn to nowhere.
I'm very lucky because would you have wanted to have a celebrity junkie for a dad?
Just do this. Okay, Mike.
Nice.
So glad you're here.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm so glad that I could get you. And you're in from New Jersey?
Yes. I came in Wednesday and I'm leaving tomorrow.
And You choose to live in Jersey.
Yes.
That's like by choice. I just want to clarify.
Yeah, I was born in North Carolina. We moved to Jersey when I was 6 months old.
Uh-huh.
And I've been a Jersey guy ever since. And I'm 15 miles out of Manhattan. So people, yeah. I don't need to be in to be there.
You know Jersey guys do this all the time.
I know. It takes me 12 minutes to get in. That's what I'm saying, and I'm good.
Yeah.
12 minutes, I park, and I find free parking every day. I've never paid for parking.
Okay, yeah, no. I mean, I'm buying it. I'm not saying that. Have you ever lived in the city?
No.
Yeah.
I grew up in Jersey City, which is right across from mm-hmm. Manhattan. It's like a ghetto. I grew up in an inner city.
Mm-hmm.
Now I live kind of like in a suburb.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. I'm sorry. It's just I have two kids too. I'm a single father. So
yeah.
Like if I didn't have my kids, I would have a goddamn shoebox in Manhattan.
Yeah.
That's kind of my mindset. If I didn't have them, I would be in the middle of Manhattan.
Yeah. So you have been sober almost 20 years?
21. February will be 22.
Wow.
Yeah.
Drinking age.
Yeah. Well, I got clean when I was 24.
Oh, no, but you have been sober at
exactly.
a person's drinking age.
A whole person's drinking age.
And so, what was the journey? What got you? That's young
right.
to get sober.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes, very young.
And so, what happened?
Well, I mean, alcohol, I loved drinking when I was a teenager, but then when I got into cocaine.
Yeah.
Like, I just got focused on just getting high.
Yeah.
And I didn't put any money towards alcohol. And it's just, alcohol was only to bring me down. I would drink vodka to go to sleep.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I would come down.
We were told similar things.
Right.
I find that rare.
Really?
Well, because, okay, people will say, you know, I didn't think I was a drug addict because, you know, I only did drugs if I was drinking. And I'd be like, well, that's not true for me because I always did coke. I only drank to modify that.
Right. Yeah. Once it became, I remember my 18th birthday party, my buddy and me, we were big drinkers, but I got into coke for like the last 6 months and he came to my house to hang out and he's like, let's go out and drink and party. And I'm like, nah, I'm good. Like,
yeah.
My money's focused right now.
Yeah.
I focus my funds.
Of course.
You know, I'll have a beer, but then the rest goes towards the coke.
Yeah.
And he wanted to just drink. And then we just parted ways, and he became a stone cold alcoholic, still like lives in the streets. Alcoholic, never got into coke. Me, I'm glad I got into coke because I could have been under a bridge with him drinking wine.
Hey, yeah, have you ever heard it's the e-ticket in?
Yeah.
It's like a Disneyland thing.
Yeah.
E-ticket, I don't know. I heard it, and then I stole it. I was like, yeah, the coke, the e-ticket in. But so, yeah, it's interesting because. When you're like, when you have a single-minded devotion to cocaine,
mm-hmm.
I think that's a very different thing. Like, I never liked smoking pot, did you?
No, yuck.
Made you paranoid?
You know what? It made me paranoid that everyone knew I was high. Like, I couldn't, I could hide every other drug.
Yeah.
I felt like I could hide, I probably wasn't. But with pot, I took one hit and my eyes were pinned,
right.
And I felt like everyone was like, dude, look how high that guy is.
Right.
And I hated that feeling.
I mean, just do you think you're just kind of a lightweight with pot too?
I think so.
Yeah.
As soon as I hit it, I was out. I was hit. I didn't like that feeling.
So when was the first time you did coke?
So I was 17.
And was it love at first?
Yeah, pretty much. But I didn't get it because I didn't know what it. I was. I hung out. I mean, I was hanging out since I was like 13, 14 years old. It seems like everybody's story. Freshman year,
mm-hmm.
I was kind of like a shy guy. And then mm-hmm. between freshman and sophomore, that summer is when I really started to do drugs. And I really started to hang out. Because you start to meet new people. Like, you know, when you're in grammar school, you're kind of like stay in your neighborhood. You know? So you don't meet new people. You go to high school, it's 4,000 new people that you get to meet. You know, and so then I start to hang out with different neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And those kids, I want to be cool like them. So they were drinking and smoking weed. So I just hang out with them.
Yeah.
So I got into weed, mescaline, and acid. That was like my thing.
I don't think of acid people and coke people as being the same people.
They weren't because those two people didn't coincide because once coke took over, that acid and mescaline guy was gone.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting what you say because my grammar school to high school switchover was not that really like that. I kind of went to school with the same people. High school was the same people as grammar school.
Oh, okay.
But it was the same time. So maybe it's just that age.
Because
everybody, any alcoholic you meet says, I had my first drink at 12.
Right.
Sometimes they say younger.
Yeah. No, most of them say it really started when they entered high school.
Yeah.
It really does. I mean, I think it's like a freedom. Like, you know, you're not so standing, you know, like single file lines to go to school. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but also it's like it doesn't come up that much. I mean, like what sixth grader is right. like, hey, let's go.
Exactly.
You know, did you do that thing where you took the liquor from your parents' liquor cabinet?
Well, my father had a bar he mm-hmm. built in like one of those like 70s bars in the middle of the living room. Mm-hmm. And behind there was all kinds of stuff. And some I didn't even know. Some was just mixers. Mm-hmm. I thought it was awful.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I was wasted. And all I drank was grenadine, but I didn't know that was part of the alcohol.
Right.
But I started drinking when I was young. I mean, was I drinking? But I would crack open. I've been drinking since I'm like, I would say legitimately probably 9.
Wow.
Because my grandfather was a stone cold alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And he would give every weekend I was drinking with him. Mm-hmm. And he let me drink scotch. And I chewed tobacco. Mm-hmm. I was just like him. He was a criminal. He was in and out of jails. I loved everything about him. I just wanted to be him.
And your parents were like totally cool for him to babysit or whatever?
Yeah, because they're clueless. And now they're so concerned about my kids. Like, really? You left me with the alcoholic who let me set things on fire in the house?
Literally?
Yeah. I set the kitchen on fire. And he was totally cool with it.
Not by choice.
No, yeah, but
as a little arsonist?
No, not like, hey, watch me set the kitchen on fire. But I had a wooden, remember the wooden fire trucks that you pull with a rope and it, like the little bell, ding, 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 ding.
I know, but I'm a girl.
Yeah, but you still saw the crap. It was like a wooden fire truck and it was wooden.
Okay. So
I went on the stove and I put the stove on and I put my wooden fire truck next to it to put the fire out. And wood fire trucks
that's kinda cute.
Tend to not.
No, I mean, but that your logic.
Yes. And it went, kitchen up, all the cabinets done.
And he laughed?
Oh, he's hilarious. Hey, that's my boy.
And so did he never found sobriety?
No. He, his thing was, I can quit anytime. He's that guy.
Yeah.
I can quit anytime. I don't really have a problem. I haven't drank a beer in 6 weeks. Like that. So if he can do 6 weeks without drinking a beer,
right,
you don't have a problem.
Meanwhile, he's drinking like vodka, you mean?
No, but he would put it down. But yeah. Like, you know, then pick it back up.
And yeah.
He was always in jail for DUIs and getting into fights in bars at 65. Like, he was just...
Did your grandmother stay with him?
No. Well, she did. Well, she moved away. They stayed together, but she lived in North Carolina. He stayed in Jersey.
Right. Yeah, that's the way to be married to a guy like that.
Yeah, exactly.
And did it skip a generation, the alcoholism?
No. My whole uncles and aunts are... Well, my uncles had problems.
But not your parents?
No. My mother was like, never drinks. And mm-hmm. My father was a correction officer, so he was straight-laced.
Mm-hmm.
So my grandfather I'm talking about is my mother's father.
Mm-hmm.
My father's father was like a straight up Catholic. Like my father was going to be a priest.
Mm-hmm.
So they were like, boom, strict.
So you start like the cocaine and the drinking, and then you go, and then what happens? You graduate from high school.
Mm-hmm. I graduate. I was like the social coke guy for a while.
Uh-huh.
I think we all have the same story. You know? I mean, like we go out, we sniff coke, talk to everybody.
Yeah.
And then it slowly goes away. Like that social. Yeah. Like I want to be around everybody. I want to be around nobody. I just want to get coke and go in my room and leave me alone. Right. That's where it went instantly.
Yeah.
And I was like from 19 to like 21, I could not do anything other than coke in my room.
Yeah. How often were you doing it? Like every day at night or every night?
Every single night. And then I worked at a paint store, and I only worked there so I could rob them. So I would go in and I would take money out of the register. Uh-huh. I would go in and I had keys to the place at night.
Uh-huh.
So I would go in at night, open up the safe, and just take cash.
And they never caught you?
Yeah, I would do this scam. I ran this scam where I would ring up a return. It was back, you know, before technology. So you write everything out.
Yeah,
on paint. So I would write out a return. This guy returned 3 gallons of paint, and then I would take the money out. But I always take it.
Well, where's the gallons of paint that you were supposed to?
There's no system of like inventory.
There's so much paint there.
There's no inventory system. There's like I bought 3 gallons. Who knows if there's 3 gallons gone or here? We don't know.
That's you know what's weird about that is that I had a very very one of my bad memories of coke. Is I decided at like 3 a.m. that I wanted to paint my closet. I had this like, this apartment. I had like. It was the whole wall was closet.
Right.
I don't take my clothes out. Then I went to the paint store. Like, I'd stayed up all night with the coke. Mm-hmm. And I went to the paint store and I was like, I want gray paint.
Right.
And the woman's like, oh, okay. Like, do you want silver gray, blah, blah, blah. And I just remember looking at her and going, she's testing me. You know that weird paranoia?
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
And I just was like, gray, okay. And I'd like, come on, paint. The bottom of sorts. So they never caught you. How long did you work at the paint store?
I got caught finally. I worked there because I worked until I was 20, almost right before, about 6 months before I got clean. They caught me, finally. They caught me.
And they were just like, Mike, how could you?
Yeah, and they were like, I've been working there since I was 17 years old, so they really loved me, and they had high hopes for me to be somebody. And I just, I've been robbing them ever since. I used to steal spray paint, and I would take lists from the kids in the streets, like, what do you want? When I would take a big
grocery list. Dealer.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
And then I would sell spray paint, $2 a can, and I would steal cans of spray paint, and then they would pop my trunk and sell $2. Who ordered the white?
So, can I ask what kind of financial amends you had to make to that paint store?
Well, I haven't.
Really?
What happened was a friend of the family, like a close friend of the family, was like their comptroller. Like, he was the one who got me the job in the first place. So, to him, like, as me being clean and my life getting better, like, that whole family that owned the paint company was so happy.
That is so nice of them.
That I was, like, better. Like, they didn't care about nothing. They didn't never charge me with anything or nothing. They were just, just like, Mike is a good guy. We know he's a good guy. He's just got to get his shit together.
Right. So, okay, and so then did you go to treatment? Did you just go?
I stopped doing coke for, I always, it's like I really felt good. I quit, like my grandfather would have 6 weeks and no beer. I quit coke for 3 days.
Yeah.
I was like, got this
lip.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
And I moved out of my neighborhood and I went back in to the neighborhood and I was just going to go have a beer, get out.
Yeah.
You know, and when I pulled in front of the bar, my best friend was walking up and said, hey, you want to take me and this guy to Harlem? We're going to cop some crack. And I was like, yeah, I'll do that. I'll take you. I'm like, I'm not doing anything. I don't get high anymore. 3 days later, I'm clean, bro.
Right.
And he's like, all right, cool. I don't know, 4 seconds after they bought the crack, I was like, can I have some of that?
Right.
And then I was done. And I smoked crack from 21 to 23.
Oh, really?
And that's what brought me.
Yeah.
I mean, coke was really the same. I think I was the same. Would have the same results if I would have stayed doing coke.
Right.
But crack really... really just, oh my God, just ripped me. 2 years and I was done.
And so if you like to hole up in your, like, you know, in your just bedroom or whatever it was doing the coke, so with the crack, did you get to tinfoil on the windows? Were you just full on not leaving your house?
I stayed in my bathroom. Uh-huh. If you go to the same house I live in, the sink.
You live in the same place?
Yeah, it's my family's house. Uh-huh. So upstairs in the bathroom, the sink has all my cigarette burns.
Oh, wow.
From just sitting in there not leaving.
Yeah.
So just the whole around the sink is just brown cigarette burns.
Wow.
From me being in there and I'm just not being able to leave that bathroom.
So you were living at home this whole time?
Yeah.
And your parents didn't know?
My father knew. He's a correction officer, so he spotted a criminal.
Right.
My mom, I'm her angel, so she doesn't want to know. She knows. I mean, stuff's missing. Money's always missing.
So you would steal from them.
Oh my God, big time.
Yeah.
And towards the end, my father, I never knew this until I got clean, but my father would, he would leave all his money in his pocket. And he had like thousands of dollars in his pocket. And I would do like a belly crawl to get into his pocket to steal his money.
While he's wearing pants?
Oh. No, I'm not that good. That's me. I would still do that if I was that good. I would crawl when he was sleeping. He'd leave his pants over his bed and I would crawl in the room. I would take 20, 40 bucks at a clip.
But he noticed.
He knew it. And my mom told me after I got clean, he left it in his pocket so you wouldn't go rob us from the streets because he knew that you would get your drugs.
Right.
He'd just rather you get it from here, not go to jail.
Do you have siblings?
Half brother, half sister.
Yeah.
From my mom's first marriage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And were you just miserable from the minute you were, like, holed up alone during the coke? Or was it still, quote unquote,
never. I don't remember. I cannot tell you. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I like drinking. I like hanging out. I can't remember a time where coke was enjoyable. I don't remember it.
You don't remember the first...
I don't remember that. I don't because I just don't. I know it was always an obsession. Even from the first, even if it was social, I was still obsessed over getting more.
Yeah.
I remember you were talking about painting your closet, your coke brain. this woman I used to buy coke from, she She always had brain fart. She was up. She never slept.
Mm-hmm.
She never ate, and she never slept. She just like was so sick looking.
Mm-hmm.
She had mounds of coke because she, this guy who was like owned like half a Channel 9, mm-hmm. would buy coke, and she would charge him like five times the amount of what it actually cost. So right. she was able to buy herself an ounce every day,
right?
Off wow. of his 40 piece. You know?
Right, right.
So we would just tap into that, and every day we would get the new stuff, and she would sell me some, and so.
Right.
But she always had harebrained schemes, so she wanted new carpet.
Mm-hmm.
And her poor daughter. I remember her daughter.
Right.
We used to get high, and her daughter could never come out of the room.
How old was your daughter?
Like 14, and just right. was stuck in her bedroom while right. we got high all over the house.
Yeah.
And but she was like, "I want carpet. Let's get carpet." And my buddy's like, "I work for a carpet guy."
Right.
So we went and broke into this guy's garage and took like a big roll of carpet
uh-huh.
and just brought it to her. And she gave us the biggest bag of coke I've ever gotten for
right.
free for this carpet. And me and these kids went to a hotel, and they broke the mirror off the wall. They put it on the floor, on the table, and we dump it out. And my first question to these two, I was like, "You guys can get money?" And they're like, "Why?" I'm like, "Because when this is gone, we need more."
Right,
and they're like,
right.
"But this isn't even gone." And I'm like,
right.
"You're not focusing, bro."
Right, right.
"You better have money or you ain't touching this."
Right.
Like, I want more already.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I relate to that, but not to that extreme.
Yeah.
I was sort of the, like, it would only occur to me that I wanted more when it was too late.
Right, right.
You know, it was like 4 a.m.
Yeah, yeah.
And so... You only remember it being bad. That's so interesting.
I only remember it being obsessive. I never remember it being, you know, a 20-piece, put it under my mattress and do some tomorrow. I don't remember.
Never had that.
I don't remember. I know there's nights that happened, but I just remember the obsession.
Yeah.
I always obsessed from the time I started. It was always like, and then someone showed me how to freebase at one point in this coke era, and I liked it because I didn't upset. For some reason, when I smoked freebase, I did not obsess.
Right.
So I was like, "Oh, I can do it this way."
Right.
I thought. And that lasted about a week of not obsessing. And then as soon as I didn't know how to cook it, I was horrible. I would waste it. I tried so many times to do it in my bathroom, and I could not. It would just be gone.
Right.
So I'm like, "I'm going back to sniffing it." And
yeah.
then I ran into some girl in a diner. Thank God I got clean. I got clean a week after this little girl. She's my waitress. We grew up in the same neighborhood. She's like, "So what's up?" Like, my mom went to the bathroom. She's like, "She's a drug addict." She's like, "What's going on? What are you doing?" I'm like, "Smoking crack, man. I'm a mess." And she's like, "Dude, you should shoot it."
Oh my
I was
God.
Like, "What?" She's like, "Just shoot it in your arm, man. You could save so much money if you just shoot it in your..." Like, we're doing this, like,
oh my
economical
God.
Conversation. My mom's in the bathroom talking about how we can save money but still get high.
Yeah.
And I was like, "So in my arm?" She goes, "Just shoot it in your arm." I'm like, "Maybe I'll do that."
Right.
Like, I considered it, and then thank God I went to detox, thank God.
Yeah. Isn't that weird? It's sort of like whatever came up as
mm-hmm.
the pot. I did heroin once because it only came up once.
Right, right.
Loved it.
Right.
Luckily, it never came up again.
Thank God.
You know?
You didn't think of it as a, because my buddy got really hooked on heroin because he took it. He was to take his off the crack. He would always buy a bag of heroin
right.
and come off the crack so he didn't Jones.
Mine was like, I knew it was I never did crack. Like, I
right.
knew it was a big thing to do heroin. For some reason, it was never a big thing to do coke.
Right.
But, like, I was like, this is a decision. But
right.
I made it within a second.
Right.
But
right.
I understood that it was a decision.
Right. Like, next level decision.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, okay, so you are, like, doing your crack. You are miserable. Were you suicidal?
I just felt hopeless. Like, I don't know if I ever considered offing myself, but
mm-hmm.
I just felt like this is. I'm never going to be able to get better. There's no way I'm going to live a normal life.
Right. And so then what were the series of events that brought you to detox?
I, again, tried to quit my mom. Here's what happened. I used to rob my mom. After I was robbing my father so
mm-hmm.
much, I didn't realize he was leaving the money for me. So I was starting to get scared. My father's 6'3", 300-pound, you know, prison guard. So I started to realize he's going to beat me down if I keep stealing his money.
Right.
So let me go back to looking for my mom's money.
Right.
Well, my mom had to sleep on her money on her pillow because I would find it anywhere she put it. She says, "If you want to find money, call Mike because his nose will find the money."
Mm-hmm.
So she was sleeping on her money and I reached in, took it out of her pillow while she was sleeping on it.
That's like tooth fairy shit.
Yeah, the worst kind of tooth fairy. Like, I actually take your teeth, they're still in your mouth. Like, they weren't ready to go yet.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so I took it. She woke up as I was stealing it, and then I crumbled up my hand. I never was honest about what I've done in my life. And she's like, what are you doing here? I'm like, I was just come. I swear to God. So I'm just coming in to give you a kiss goodnight.
Mm-hmm.
Serious?
Yeah.
So I walked out of her room into my living room, and she followed me. And she's like, you're not leaving this house with my goddamn money to get high. And I'm like, I don't have any money.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, I had $60. I now have $20.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I didn't take it.
Right.
I put $60 in my pillow, and you didn't take it.
Yeah.
And I would not get honest. And finally, she was like, I'm telling you right now, you're not. You leave this house, I'll call the cops. You'll never come back in. And I was just sitting there with this money in my hand. I didn't want her to see it. And I'm just... And I just broke down crying. I handed it to her. I said, I can't stop. I can't stop.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I can't stop. I cannot. Every day I think I go to bed, I'm going to wake up. I'm going to do it differently. I wake up and do the same thing. I can't stop.
Mm-hmm.
So she said, you want to go to the hospital to get help? I'm like, no, I don't need that. Just need to. I need to not do drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried like 3 or 4 days, and then I wound up getting high again.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had my mom followed me to the drug dealer.
Mm-hmm.
And when I copped, I drove back around because I stole from my father again. And I drove back around, and she was standing right in front of the drug dealer yelling up to his house, going, if you come down here again, I'll personally kill you.
I mean, the crazy thing about that is, first of all, that she did that is beyond loving and bossy.
Yeah.
But also that, like, you don't think of that stuff as working. You know, they always tell parents, just, you know, just you can't control it. You know, all you got to do is set some boundaries, and that person, you know what I mean?
Right, you got to leave it on that person, the ball's in their court.
Yeah.
And she didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
She was like, so then I saw her, and I was like, you seriously get home? And she was like, pull that fucking car over now. And I was like, pull the car over. And the friend of the family that worked for that paint company, he was there, and he's like, get in the car. I left my car in Jersey City,
mm-hmm.
left it, and she... She jumped in my car. No, she took my car, and I got in his car. And we just drove home, and she was like, you need help. And I was like, well, then take me to the hospital. What do you want from me?
Mm-hmm.
So she took me to a detox. And on the way, I was crying. I felt so good to get it off my chest. Like, I'm fine. I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
Went to detox. They let me out in 3 days. I was a good student.
Mm-hmm.
And I left in 3 days, and I went to one meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, nah, I'm good. I don't know.
Right.
I'm done. I don't want to use again, but I don't need all this hoopla.
Right.
They're hugging me and handing me papers with their number
holding
on it.
Hands.
We're good.
Yeah.
All good. Thank you.
Yeah.
But I'm never using again. I quit.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Yeah.
And that lasted for about 5 days on my own.
Yeah.
And I went and got high again.
Yeah.
And then I came home, and she knew I was sleeping, and she snuck up in my room and looked under my bed and saw the crack paraphernalia.
Oh my God.
And she was like, I knew it. And I was like, I don't know what to do, man. So she took me back to that same hospital, let me back in. 3 weeks later, I did 6 days in the detox, and when I was in there, some old woman was in a meeting, you know, they brought a meeting in.
Yeah,
H&I
stuff.
Yeah, some old, she was like 1,000 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone, there was like this one young crackhead, he was talking about, he was all into it, and she was just so subdued, and she was like, I just, you know, I go to meetings, and my life has gotten better, and I'm like, oh, that was all I need. And I was like, that woman said, I go to meetings and my life gotten better. It was like so simple. Like, these other people were talking about all this shit they do.
Yeah.
And she just said, I go to a place and I'm better.
Right.
That's all I got to do. I can do that. And I put my hand up while she was talking. I was like, hello, hello, hello. And I'm like, so I can just go to meetings and I'll be better? And she's like, yeah, well, shut up. I'm talking.
Right.
And I was like, got it. Thank you. That's all I needed. And I came out and I went to meet. I did it.
Did you go all the time?
I went all the time. Unfortunately, I don't as much, you know, I mean, I'm not as tapped into the
fellowship. It's hard to stay. I mean, it's, you know,
how much?
I'll be 14 in November.
Okay.
And it's one of the first times that I'm slacking off a little and doing okay with it.
Right.
That's what worries me.
Well, my whole thing is, and I can talk to you about it.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
This is cool, wide open.
Okay. Yeah, however you want to do it.
Okay, good. Because I am 100% pro 12 and 12.
Yeah.
Because I know what it did for me.
Yeah.
And I know what it does for me still.
Yeah.
It changed who I am. So it's not like the constant vigilance that we talk about. I have constant vigilance. Like, I make a decision every day. I don't want to use drugs or alcohol.
Right.
I love my life. There's not one thing that can benefit if I was able to drink socially. I can't see a positive.
Yeah.
I've never heard one acceptance speech at an awards and going, the one thing I'm grateful for is my ability to drink successfully.
I've one challenge to that. What about dating?
Going.
Do you think that would be easier with drinking?
Yes. You know what I think would be even easier for me as a comic? Dating would be, because everyone's, the people who drink are more uncomfortable than I am. Like, I don't care.
Oh, yeah.
Drink up, get drunk. I don't care. Do you think? But people think that they can't.
Yeah, they think you're a cop. And like,
yeah, or they can't let their hair down because they think I'm uptight. I'm like, yeah. I don't care.
Right.
What you do. It doesn't affect me.
Yes.
I don't think you're a lush. I don't think the problem isn't alcohol and drugs. I'm the problem.
Yeah.
The drugs and alcohol are fine. Some people are going to enjoy them forever. I wasn't able to do that.
Yes. I think we all sort of feel, at first I did not feel that way at all.
Right.
And, I remember, you know, how people go, do you mind if I drink? And you're always, for like 10 years, I've been like, whatever, 13 years. I've been like, sure. No, please, right. Please. But I remember in the very beginning, I went out with my family and they ordered, like, my brother wanted like a glass of wine. It was brunch. You know, he wanted a bottle of wine for the table. And it was like 11 in the morning. He goes, do you mind, Anna? And I was newly sober. I was like, uh-huh. I mind.
Really?
And he was so pissed. I'm like, you asked.
Right.
But you know, lots of people, so if there's one gripe that I hear from people about being sober, like, it's the dating thing.
It is uncomfortable. Like, me and my buddy will look at, like, Tinder, right?
Which
is, and then, like, girls, like, with their profile pic is, like, them in a wine.
Oh, really?
Like, I can't swipe to the right, unfortunately. You're cute as shit, but you're really about the wine.
Yeah.
And I can't, that's the one thing that if I was ever scared, it would be wine, because it seems like everyone enjoys it at dinner.
Right.
I didn't really do that. So, I mean, I got high. I didn't do wine.
Yeah.
But it looks fabulous.
And but does it, when you think about like having a glass of wine, doesn't that sound horrible?
It does. You know why? Because the one little glass that you see somebody eating, drinking right before dinner looks amazing. You know what doesn't look amazing? When the red is dried up on their lips and they've had nine of them.
Yeah.
And they're like, this is good. And you could smell it on them. Like, I'm good. Yeah. I missed that. I'm all right.
But also, to me, I mean, maybe you just didn't do enough drinking without drugs, but like, I know what it feels like to have a glass of wine or two beers. And it feels awful. Like, I want, you know, 9 beers, a couple shots, and Coke.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I get it.
It's like,
I used to say, when I share, I'm like, if I can drink successfully, I would do that every day.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I, my brain isn't like a glass of wine and some salmon. It just isn't that.
Right.
It looks great, but that's not who I am. And I know that. But when I'm on a date, I think, it would be easier because that person would be way more comfortable if I drank.
Do you ever feel like, you know, especially when you were, you know, had less sobriety, uncomfortable dating and wishing, you know, missing it then?
Well, but I was hardcore for a while with the program, so if I wouldn't date anybody who drank, I wouldn't be in that situation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't smell it on my, until I got about 6 years, I didn't even step foot in a bar. Like, I was hardcore.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was so afraid to return that I didn't know that. I didn't realize when early in sobriety that this is my choice.
Mm-hmm.
This whole thing is my choice.
Mm-hmm.
Even the people I've met in sobriety, they can say, you know what you're doing wrong? You know, it doesn't really matter because this is my choice. I don't care what you think I'm doing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
This whole life of mine is my choice.
Mm-hmm.
And but when I first came here, I was so afraid to do anything wrong. Because I didn't want to go back to that.
Mm-hmm.
So I just did whatever you told me to do. This is what I do.
Did you meet militant people who said, you know, you should not go into a bar no matter what you do?
Oh, my God. Especially because I went, you know, to the hardcore fellowship. You know what I mean?
Oh, the PG?
You know, the NA fellowship, which is...
Oh, I've never been. Is it way more hardcore?
Well, it's a lot more, you know, like, don't go anywhere. You want to put a needle in your neck again? I'm like, I never really had one, ever. Well, you can. I'm like, I'm sure I can. I don't, I'm not thinking about that. But they were hardcore, and I was grateful for them because they kept me straight.
Yeah.
Like, and I needed that. They didn't yell at me. They were just like, if you want this, this is what you got to do.
Yeah.
Then when you start going to bars, some of those militants are like, I can't believe you're hanging in a bar. I'm like, now I work in bars every night. That's where I don't even think about it. I could hand somebody 9 beers. I don't even think I just hand. Doesn't even cross my mind. I don't care.
Yeah.
This is, I love my life. Why do I, that doesn't affect me.
Your amazing-sounding mother must have been kind of shocked. Or did she expect it to work out this whole time?
What that I was...
Just the transformation.
She knew that if I put my... that if I got help, I would be okay. Mm-hmm. I was her baby. So mm-hmm. like, I'm her baby. So I'm always going to be okay. But she's still... That's 20... You know, almost 22 years later. She's still like... Are you hanging out with a girl who she drank? are you okay with that? Like, right. Yeah, Mom, I'm good. I'm
right.
Good. Well, just be careful. Like, she still, she remembers that guy. She never wants that guy back.
Yeah, I don't blame her.
So, so she's still cautious, very cautious.
So, okay, and so you've sort of eased that. Well, when did you get into doing the recovery comedy? How long were you sober? Okay, so I know that you, and I had Alonzo Bodden on recently.
I know, I saw that on your website.
And like, and so he, like you, never thought about being a comic till he got sober.
Yeah, and I didn't think about it till 9 years in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was nine years clean with my sponsor at the time. I was like, you ever think about doing comedy? I'm like, no, I don't even know what that is. He's like, you tell funny stories, you share funny, you make everybody laugh at weird stuff. Why don't you try doing comedy? And I'm like, I never even thought about it.
Yeah.
And he was a guitar. He used to do guitar open mics. He's like, why don't you come to one of my open mics and do comedy? And so I did. He said, you're going to do 20 minutes at my next open mic. And I was like, all right. I wrote jokes and went up. And I was like, oh, my God. I fell in love.
And so you wrote jokes on the spot?
You know what I did? I just wrote stuff I've always been saying in the diner for nine years.
And that worked?
And it worked.
Well, I'm not a comedian, but I will tell you, Women's Health assigned me a story. This was like, I don't know, 10 years ago.
Right.
It was called Would You Dare? And so they assigned people stories about something that scared them or something
right.
they
like
shouldn't
like public
do.
Speaking or something like that.
Yeah, and so they assigned me, like, they gave me a couple choices. I don't remember what the other choice was, but I was like, oh, I'll do the stand-up comedy thing because I'm real funny.
Right.
And I thought by getting up and kind of saying the same stuff that made my friends laugh, it would work, and, you know, I totally bombed.
Right.
Which made for a better story. You know, if I'd been super great at it,
yeah.
What I've written.
No, I tell stories and things that I made fun of recently. Mm-hmm. I just brought on stage, and I wrote them out. Like, I understood that it had to be, like, I had to have a beginning, a middle, and an end to every mm-hmm. joke. So I understood that. So I'm like, I'll just do that on stage to see why am I saying this joke, what's funny about it, and now get out, how do I get to the next joke? Mm-hmm. And that's what I wrote that out.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that in a bar with 8 people in it in Midtown, in about a block away from the Trade Center. And it was people, there was like 2 black women came in to go to the bathroom, and they just watched me.
Mm-hmm.
And they, when I came on stage, like, boy, you got rhythm. That's your first time on stage. And I'm like, yeah. She's like, man, you got that. And I was like, really? And then some guitarist was like, dude, that's your first time ever? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, wow, you just inspired me to be a comic. I don't even want to do guitar anymore. And I was like, wow. Like, it was...
That's amazing.
And I was done. I was so addicted to it that I wanted to quit my job at that moment.
What were you doing?
I'm a salesman is what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't do it now, but that's what I was, an outside mm-hmm. sales rep. Mm-hmm. And that's all I ever wanted to do. When I worked in that paint store,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't get off drugs enough. I just wanted to be a paint manufacturing sales rep. Like, it's just like this woman came in. She's like her sample box. I just wanted to be that person.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I ever wanted because I thought that was what a man was. Like,
yeah.
Like a guy with a bag, you know what I mean? Like, suit, tie kind of undone a little bit. That was a man. So I just, that a friend of mine recently told me that's why you wanted to be a sales rep so much because you were in such hell. You thought that was normal.
Right. What a shit job compared to being a comic.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, right. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So was it a struggle, or did you have success from the get-go?
What, for comedy?
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, because, I mean, I got laughs off the bat.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, things, you took it slow, because I had a full-time job, so it was just, like, comedy was at night. It wasn't, like, I never thought about it as a career. It was just mm-hmm. the thing I did every night.
Mm-hmm.
And then the recovery humor was easy. That was the second show I ever did, was a recovery show, and I did 20 minutes of recovery humor. That stuff I've always said in meetings about going to getting a key tag and 90 means in 90 days, that kind
of
stuff. And
wait, what? Give me some of it.
Like in NA, you get a white key tag.
Yeah.
And my thing was like, you give me a key tag? Like, I don't even got keys. Like, the hell am I going to do with it? And you must like give me a wallet. You know, I'm just getting clean. I have nothing.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, that's true.
So it was that. And the 90 means in 90 days, how you tell somebody go to 90 and 90. And they're like, really? Like, what do you got going on? Like, I don't know about you, but when I stopped smoking crack, my schedule pretty much cleared up.
Yeah.
I'm available every day.
Yeah.
Because that's all I did was get high, you know?
Yeah.
So I did those jokes. And then I did personal jokes with people in the room, like mm-hmm. like stories. And that was just, it was killing.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm going to gear my material to recovery for a while. That's what I did in the beginning. And now most of my, I hardly do any recovery like mm-hmm. shows anymore.
Mm-hmm. And so you would do like conventions?
I was doing tons of conventions. Now lately, because of Last Comic Standing, people are wanting me to do their conventions.
But they don't pay like real gigs, huh?
Actually.
No, do they? Good to know.
Yeah.
That's good to know. Because I've talked to people who did like one-offs.
Right.
And they were like, yeah, it wasn't great money.
Some of it's, I'll tell you this, I don't like to use the fellows' names, but the other fellowship, they
the
don't pay a lot.
One.
Yeah, they don't pay a lot because unlike an NA convention, NA convention charges for every little extra thing you want to do.
Oh, so you can charge?
So if you want to go to the, you have to pay registration fee because you're in a hotel and the hotel charges us to be there. So you got to pay some rent to hang out for 3 days.
Right.
So that's usually like $20 and that goes towards the hotel itself and renting out rooms so we can have
meetings. You get a room for $20?
No.
Sorry.
No, like banquet rooms to do meetings in.
Yeah, got it.
So if you come in, you register, you get $20 for registration, you can go to all the meetings.
Yeah.
Meetings are normally free, but we're not in a free zone. We're at a hotel. So I got to get $20 help for the cost. So that does that. And then some, like, and you want to go to the dance, it's $5 to get into the dance because we got to pay the DJ. You want to go to a comedy show, it's $10 to go to a comedy show. That's what they charge for everything. In the big fellowship, they do not.
Yeah.
It's just $15 to get in for everything. So that's why their budgets are low because they can't afford. There's no money coming in.
And then because it's so big, I bet they can get good talent.
Yes.
Because people are like, oh, I want to be of service.
Exactly. And I used to do it like for dirt just to do it. Because I was always giving back. But now, there's a guy who passed away recently, like 3 years ago, Mikey D.
Yeah.
You remember Mikey D?
That was so sad to the comedy community.
Oh, my God. To recovery community, because he was really like a voice for recovery. Like, he was that rough guy that was bringing, like, what we do in recovery to the mainstream. So, but when he, when I first started doing comedy, he was already in demand at the conventions, but he would give like this insane amount of money for what he wanted, and I was new and I was judgmental, and I'm like, who's this guy? Service. And then now that I'm busy, like he's busy, like you, I get it. Like, I didn't get it at the time, but you're asking a man to not work.
Yeah.
The night, like, I can't not work.
Yeah.
So if you're gonna have my whole weekend, because if you're doing one night, you're pretty much your whole weekend shot, because you can't do Friday somewhere because they want you for both nights, so you're just doing one night and
I'm losing money,
so you can't split the difference with me. You gotta give me half of what I would've made, and that's what he would be asking, half of what he would make. And I realize it now.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's what I mean.
Did you ever hear his TED Talk? Mock storytelling?
Oh my gosh, the best.
Yeah. They play it on NPR a lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I just heard it over the weekend again.
Beautiful.
And
he did his one-man show based on that story.
Okay.
And
we can say his full name. Did you say his full name?
Yeah, Mike DiStefano.
Yeah.
He right before, he was working on a one-man show, and him and his agency and his management were working on the show, and they produced it, and they got it on film, so they're going to be releasing that soon as a short. It was all about his wife and the AIDS and all of that stuff. It was all that story that he tells to the moth. It was like that, but for an hour.
Wow.
About his whole life. And it's all he wanted to do was tell his wife's story. That's basically all he ever wanted to do, was get that story out. So he finally got it out, and when he filmed it, he was in the green room, and his manager was like, hey, you want to go outside? People want to congratulate you. And he was emotionally drained. He's like, just give me a minute, because that's all I really wanted to do, was to tell that story. Mm. And 3 days later, he died. So, like, I kind of feel like, I don't believe in a lot of things like that, but I kind of feel like he was just like, that was what his purpose, to get that story out, and his heart was like, I'm good.
Yeah,
because
he died young.
Yeah, he was only, 46?
Yeah.
And a massive heart attack.
Yeah.
You know, that's scary. That's the one person, you hear all these people die, that one, him dying really scared me. It's like, it just happened out of nowhere. I start thinking about, he just was dead. Like, there's no goodbyes to anybody. You're just gone?
Yeah.
Like, I don't get to say goodbye to anybody. I just get to, nobody gets to see me. That's it. It's over.
Well, a lot of addicts in comedy have died. Not a lot, but I mean a number.
Yeah, a lot of overdoses, too. I mean, like, Greg Giraldo.
And Mitch.
And Mitch Hedberg.
Yeah.
Both died in Jersey. Both died pretty much doing the same club.
Oh, I feel like I heard that.
Yeah, they was doing the Stress Factory.
So what were we on? That was okay. So yeah, recovery comedy, kind of like, that makes sense.
Yeah, about how they charge. So,
and by the way, some of the comedians that I've heard,
mm-hmm.
from that are not that funny, is all I'm going to say.
Good call.
Yeah. Like, there's a wide variety in terms of who's funny.
Now, that's the one thing, and I'm not bragging, but people bring me out. I've been brought out to Missouri, Texas, I'm going to Houston. People bring me out because my brand of comedy for the rooms is so specific.
Yeah.
And it is like I'm up there talking about things that they're talking about right there. I'm not like preaching. I'm not giving
them. You don't have a canned.
Yeah, I'm not thing. Giving a funny meeting. Yeah. That's all it really is. Sometimes these guys are like funny speakers.
Yeah.
Versus a comic. I'm doing stand up comedy and I'm not making corny jokes about I break out in handcuffs. I'm not doing none of that crap. But that's what you see. It's like, really? You just said break out in handcuffs? There's 9 guys who are not comics who just said it in the meeting next door.
Right.
You know? Come on.
Well, that's the other thing is, at least in LA, comedy is so high in meetings.
Right.
I mean, it's like there are a lot of hilarious people.
Really?
Oh, yeah. So I would hear some of these recovery comics, and I'm like, no, you're not as funny as the people I hear in my
regular speaking.
Meeting. Yeah. Right. Oh, you're just sharing.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly. Know? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, so, okay. And so then when did Last Comic come along in terms of your sobriety? So you're doing the recovery comedy, and then?
I'm doing recovery comedy, and that's, like I said, where I got my start. But then I was working clubs because that's where you do comedy every night is in clubs. So I started to pull away from doing just recovery comedy and developed an hour of regular comedy. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where I've been going with that. And then I guess about a year and a half ago, I got a manager who submitted me for Last Comic in January.
Wait, it was only this recent one?
This past season.
I didn't know that. Okay.
This past season.
Okay.
And so I went out to audition. I came out in February to audition.
Mm-hmm.
In front of 20 people. Mm-hmm. It was all the producers, and Wanda Sykes was in the back.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't see her, but you can hear her. And
yeah.
I could just hear her laughing. Like,
That's good.
And I was like, oh, I just made Wanda laugh like that. It was awesome.
Yeah.
They gave me a 4-minute audition. They were clapping. I was like, it was so good. I walked. I mean, this is true. So I walked out. The woman who was just, her job was to open and close the door for you. She hugged me.
Mm-hmm.
Said, you're amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I walked out, and they kind of like you did at the Lovitz Comedy Club. So when they dump you out of the audition,
you're in Universal
City. You're in the middle of Universal City.
Yeah.
By yourself, you got to walk down to a shuttle van.
Yeah.
So I'm just standing there, and I'm kind of walking, and I got kind of like to a dead end, and I just started crying.
Mm-hmm.
And I called my daughter, and she's 17 now. I was like, Sam, I nailed it. I mean, I don't know if they're going to call me back for that show, but I'll tell you right now, even if they don't call me, I nailed it.
Yeah.
Like, it ain't going to be on me.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, if they're looking, they're checking because of something else. It's not because of what I just did in there.
Yeah.
And I felt relieved. I was amazed. When I got the call that I got it, it was anticlimactic because I felt like, even if you could have called me and said I didn't get it, I felt like I did my job.
Yeah.
You know, so, then I got to get this show, and I came out and filmed the first round, made it through the first round to the semifinals, and then I didn't go any further
because mm-hmm.
I got out of the moment and into the bigger picture.
You did?
Yeah, and that you can't do that.
So you know the second it happened in your material?
The second it happened, before going on, I was like, I'm all about the win, and I know how much it's going to change my life, and I could not shake that thought.
Yeah, that's interesting. This is very low stakes, comparatively speaking, but yesterday I was in a hip-hop dance class.
Right.
And this teacher's so good. Oh, my God. Benjamin Allen, if anyone's listening, you've got to go to his class.
Okay.
So he's such a gifted teacher that, you know, usually go to hip-hop dance class, you can't do shit.
Right.
He is so good that it doesn't matter how bad you are at remembering combinations, you get it in his class.
Okay.
And then I'd be like, I literally been giving these thoughts like, oh, so-and-so saw me do this now. They'd be so impressed, but they couldn't do it. And every time I did that,
you would mess up.
I couldn't remember the information. And I'm just like, this is the best practice for staying in the moment.
Yes. That's maybe I should do it just to stay in the moment.
It's the best practice I know of.
Right.
Better than meditation.
Really?
Because I really,
you're focused.
You gotta, if you don't stay, you better just leave the class.
Right.
You're not going to be able to.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, then you know what I feel like when you're not in the moment.
Yeah, it's the worst.
And they did a couple of things. Like, they were really great to all comics. They didn't make one comic look bad this season. Because Wanda's a comic. So she made all the comedians. Even when you got voted off, your fans were like, where did he? Why? Mm-hmm. They didn't show bad comedy.
Mm-hmm.
But my semifinal set was, I forced it. And I was trying to be this guy they wanted me to be. But I was already that guy.
Yeah.
So it's like, you're trying to be somebody you already are. Why are you forcing it?
So did you know at that moment, you're like, I'm done?
Oh, as soon as I was done. You go in the green room, they put all the cameras, they want to see you come back. Yeah. It's reality.
Yeah.
And as soon as they walked in, someone said, so are your kids going to college? I'm like, well, that was never in the cards. But if they were waiting on that set, they're definitely not going to college.
Right.
And the camera was like, yeah, I didn't nail it. I forced it.
Yeah.
The audience was dead. They were a paid Hollywood audience. I don't want to talk crap about your neighborhood, but when you pay...
Oh, yeah, yeah. No,
they were just
it.
Like... They've been there 7 hours. I went up 5 hours after they've been there. 5 hours in that theater. There was, like, old people just staring at me like, what's...
The Montalban? Is that where you did it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were done. They were done. It was fried. And I was like, all right, well, there's no energy. And instead of, like, in a normal comedy club, I would roll back and take their energy. But there I was, like, trying to be this hyped up dad, angry dad again. Like, that's not the energy they were giving you.
Yeah.
I should have went with what they were giving me, and I didn't. And I forced it, and I was forcing it. And one of my good friends was in the audience. He was like, you're forcing it. And I'm like, he just would, like, eye contact. I'm like, I can't stop it now. I'm already in this bit that's forcing this bit. And I'm like forcing it. I'm like, ugh. In the middle of it, I'm like, ugh, what is going on here?
Yeah.
And at the end, even like the first, like Roseanne said, I didn't get your character this time. I didn't get you this time. I think you did it all wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, you set it up wrong. I was like, yeah, I can't argue.
Mm-hmm. But so how did just being on Last Comic change your career?
Well, now I can get into clubs without actually, you know, a lot of times as a comic, you try to get into a club and like, yeah, you have a clip.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to say that. I was so Mike Gaffney. I was just on Last Comic Standing. And I was like a main, like they used me in all the promos.
Mm-hmm.
Every talk show when they showed a clip of the show was my clip.
Mm-hmm.
I was like the main focus because they really felt like I was going to, I could have won. Just my story alone, recovering. Single dad raises his kids, you know, my act is all based on me being a dad and single and yelling at my moron kids. Like, they like all of that. It's a good, it's a sitcom.
That's a guy to root for.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what they were hoping for. But since I didn't really produce on that set, they could not put me through. They wanted to, but I didn't give them enough.
Yeah.
If I would have gave them a little more, they would have put me through.
Well, what about do you believe everything happens the way it's meant to, and so that was supposed to happen?
I believe that was supposed to be, because there was a couple things production-wise that they made me change, like the way I dressed.
Mm-hmm.
And I should have been more confident in who I am and said, no, I'm good. This is what I wear.
Right.
You're not dressing me. But my first time dealing with a network, so you just like, I guess I should play all the game. You know, play it.
Yeah.
You know, do whatever they say. Show them you're workable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it took me out of
who. Line.
It took me out of who I was. So that's the lesson I learned is, and I talked to Russell Peters. He was one of the judges, and I saw him a couple of weeks later in New York, and he was like, because they put me in an outfit that I would never wear in a theater.
Mm-hmm.
I wear it hanging out, but never in a theater. I always wear dress shoes, nice pants, and a shirt button up. I just try to dress halfway decent in a theater.
Mm-hmm.
They put me in a hoodie, jeans, and sneakers.
Right.
And I didn't feel comfortable. The very first words out of Russell Peters' mouth when he was judging me, who dressed you? What are you wearing? And I was like, I didn't want to be trash that guy.
Yeah.
So I was like, I didn't pick this. Mm-hmm. And he was like, why? I'm like, I didn't pick this. So when I saw him in New York, I'm like, they told me to wear this. And he was like, why? He's like, they wanted me to look like a blue-collar dad. He's like, you are a blue-collar dad.
Yeah, really.
Like, whatever you wear is what a blue-collar dad would wear. I'm not a guy playing a blue-collar dad.
Yeah.
Let me wear what I wear.
Yeah.
And that was kind of got my head. And then they gave me some critiques on how I opened my act. And I changed it to their style. But that's not my style.
Yeah.
And Wanda was trying to help me do it the way I knew would have done it. But I was like, no, I took their notes. I'm going to change. And she was like, okay, well, if you made changes. Because she was like a mentor on the show. And I made changes to adapt to what they said, but it wasn't who I was. So when I came out, I normally come out, I stay on stage for a second. I kind of call attention to something going on in the moment to get me in the moment. So right before I came on, they did a makeup check on me. And I had makeup on for like 4 hours. And the woman was like, your makeup isn't moved. I'm like, yeah, because I have no idea how to deal with this, so I haven't touched myself at all. Mm-hmm. I'm like very stiff.
Mm-hmm.
I said to her, I'm like, no wonder my daughter's always aggravated. You can't touch your face. Once you have makeup on, you can't touch yourself. I'm like, I'm itching, I'm trying to, like, I don't want to ruin it. And the makeup woman laughed. Now, I would have went out there and said, I've that little story.
Yeah.
just for that 30 seconds to get me in the moment.
Real, yeah.
But they told me, don't do that kind of stuff. Get right to your material. So I went out right into material, and Roseanne was like, you kind of like went right into your material. I'm like, haha, yeah.
Yeah.
You told me to.
But so do you yet see why it was meant to, was it meant to teach you those lessons?
That's how I'm looking at it.
Yeah.
It meant to teach me those lessons, also meant for me to make those contacts I made. And to show the like to for myself that I can do it if I put my mind to it and I focus. I can nail an audition that's very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I can do certain things. I can be a part of this community out here. I'm a New York comic. I'm an East Coast comic, but I can do it here.
Yeah, but it's much like real comics don't think it's real out here, right?
Well, comics who are just grinding comics, there's no reason to be out here.
Yeah.
Because this is, you're out here because you want to be on a billboard somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, that's how we feel. You don't come out to LA unless you're working on some sort of project.
Yeah.
If you want to be a grinding comic, you stay on the East Coast and work.
Yeah.
Because we can make a lot more money doing comedy over there than they can.
And you can practice in a million clubs.
All night long.
Yeah.
I mean, you got guys like Dane Cook who can get up anywhere. There's a few out here that can get up anywhere.
Yeah.
But most of the guys are grinding in a little some crap restaurant bar.
Yeah.
You know, with three people getting drunk over Thai food out here.
Yeah.
And, there's like 12. I can do 12 spots a night if I wanted to run around in New York.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's a lot of one-nighters in New York that they don't have out here. Like, they don't even understand. Like, I do Firehouses and Knights of Columbuses. And they pay great money. If I put two of those together in a weekend, I can make $1,500 for a weekend. There's nobody making $1,500 in L.A. doing comedy on the weekend.
Yeah.
Unless they hit the road somewhere. I can drive 20 minutes and make that money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's a different...
It's a different situation. Yeah.
So, like, I'm trying to make a living doing comedy. Of course, television and the big screen would be great, but I need to make a living doing comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and in terms of recovery, how does it help your comedy career in terms of, like, one day at a time, any of that stuff?
You know what helps me? And you hate to say, you ever hear somebody who's like, I'm very humble. And I mean, you just lost that. You know what I mean?
Like, it's like saying we're in a fancy restaurant. Like, you wouldn't really be saying that.
Exactly. You know? You don't call it. But I believe being in the program has helped me with humility.
Yes.
And I'm humble and I'm not at all arrogant. And I'm very, like, welcoming to anybody around me. I'm very, like, nice to new people. Like, being in the program, you always welcome newcomers.
Yeah.
And like, I'm like that with new comics. Somebody who's brand new to it, like the game, and they're like looking around like, what do I do? Like, I'm very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to, I think that's all a direct result of doing that in the program.
Yeah, that's interesting.
You know.
Well, I feel like that's a good note to end on.
Yes, absolutely.
And I feel like also, how great is it that the record button stayed on this whole time? Did you, I've checked 3,000
times. I saw you and...
I know.
My whole time, I'm like, wow, that was really good what we just said. I hope to God it's on there.
I know. And I never want people to think that I'm, like, I take every glance away from you very personally. You know, if you're sharing in a meeting, this happened to me yesterday, and you talk to the speaker. Because, like, that's who you need to focus on. And the speaker's looking away or talking mm-hmm. to it's just like, no one's listening is how
yes.
I feel.
I have one of my jokes is, you ever, like, when the speaker's speaking, I always make, as they're speaking, I look right in their eyes.
Yeah.
But, like, sometimes your speaker will just focus on you and it makes you uncomfortable. Like, all right, man.
I feel special when they do that.
I feel like I'm locked up. Like, come on, look at somebody. There's 19 people in this meeting. You can't look at someone else? Let me out. And then, like, I kind of, like, wish there was, like, an explosion off to the right. So he looks away. I'm like, don't look at him. He locks you in. He doesn't let you out. No, don't. He locks you up.
It's flattering, maybe. Maybe you just look like somebody that, you know.
I had a woman. She moved from Arizona to my area. And this was 18 years ago, and she said when she came to a meeting, she was asked to speak. Her friend said, can you speak? She's new to the area, and she comes in, and she just looks out, and then she sees me. And she goes, you were the most welcoming face.
Yeah.
And she goes, to this day, she's like, no one made me feel more comfortable in a meeting than you looking at me.
Because you probably have a smile on your face.
Yeah.
You
and
must.
And I'm like...
All eager.
Yeah. Like, all up in there, like, me too. I do that too. My vagina itches. Like, it's like, I just so identify at everything.
Not the AA head nod and everything.
Everything. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. Do a little moan. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a pet peeve of mine. When people, they can't experience what's happening on their own, they need to look at you and be like, get a load of this.
Yeah, yeah. I got it. You do yours.
You do yours. Yeah. I'll do my experience. I don't need to share it with you. But, okay, wait. We tried to end. You're fantastic. Thank you so much for coming
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate
it. So glad we got to meet you.
So that was Mike Gaffney coming to you all the way from New Jersey, making a special visit. And I hope you loved him. He's great. Check him out. Funny, sweet, nice guy, sober age, 21 years? Yeah. And go to audibletrial.com/afterpartypod to get your free audiobook download and a free membership. See you next time.